This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
This is Tech Webcast.
Computers.
Technology.
Gadgets.
And other geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast.
And
on Facebook. And check techwebcast.info for info. Tech Webcast.
Turn on. Tune in. Drop on.
Welcome to episode 263 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 2nd of November 2013. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Please rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. Your hosts today are Brad, Jody, Steve, Paul, and myself, Andrew. And our special guest today is Steve Mulk from MulksTVTalk.com. How are you doing today, Brad?
I am going fantastic. And yourself, Andrew?
I'm doing very well. It's an absolutely beautiful, stunning day in Melbourne today, a spring day, and the horse racing is on. Mm-hmm. So it's a good afternoon.
It is a great afternoon. You're going to have a bet, mate, as...
Yeah, I've got a couple bets on. I'm catching up with some friends this afternoon and have a few drinks and watch a few horses, so it should be good.
All right, sounds fun. We've got Jody back on. She wasn't on last week. Welcome back, Jody.
Hey, I'm back. Yes, last week I was at a haunted hayride with my daughter, and it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Very scary.
Okay. I'm sure it was. We have Chatterbox Live on. Welcome back, Chatterbox Live. Steve from Texas or where it is.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I had a pretty good week. I had a guest early on my show. It was very interesting. And actually, now I'm working for another guy part-time with video production, so it's very exciting.
All right, good one. Also, we got Paul on. Hey, Paul, with the iPad Air.
Hey, how you going? Right?
Good, mate.
And everyone else?
Yes. You got the iPad Air, mate?
Yeah, I do.
Give us a quick review of it, and what do you like about it and don't like about it?
Everything's great. It's pretty much as light as an iPad mini, but bigger.
Okay.
It looks like an iPad mini from a distance. And the letdown for me is probably iOS 7, but I'll get more on that later.
Wow. Okay. Andrew, are you planning on upgrading your iPad anytime soon at all or not?
Not really. I've got the iPad 3 and I've got the iPad mini. And to be honest, they are doing pretty much everything I need. I've still got an iPad 1, but the iPad 1, it can't really do anything anymore. I only use it at home now as a music station because the browsing, web browsing, everything is just so slow. But with my iPad mini and my iPad 3, I'm pretty happy with where I am for now.
Well, I'll be getting the iPad mini when it comes out, so I'll be getting it. I'm going to get the 32-gig one. What about you, Jody?
You know what? I think it has some really cool features. I don't know if I'm going to get it right away. I have the iPad 3, which wasn't really called the iPad 3. It was called the new iPad. But no, it's the 3. but I like it. I've got a lot of programs on it. It still does everything I need it to do. I think the new one is cool. It's supposed to be much faster. The specs on it are amazing, but I don't know if it makes sense because I'm still happy with the one I have.
Okay. So. All right. What about you, Steve Mulks? Welcome to the show, by the way, mate. Welcome. Good to have you on again.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, look, no, I'm – what am I still – well, I have to say, as a person who grew up as a Microsoft nerd because that was my job, I've become much more of an Apple fanboy, though there's nothing in the new iPad announcements to really drag me to shell out my cash.
Yeah.
For anything that's going on. I mean, my iPad mini I got last year for Christmas, it's still rocking, so.
All right. What about you, Chatterbox Live? Are you going to be upgrading your iPad at all, mate?
Hey, I don't think I'm necessarily going to get it because, I fairly recently got the iPad mini, mostly just to get more storage. I was using 16 gigabytes before. Yeah, it's much faster and all that, but yeah, for my use, the one I have now is fine.
All right. Before I forget, Andrew, do you want to mention the Humax PVR review before we forget?
Yeah, we're doing a PVR review on the Humax device, and it's a full high-definition Wi-Fi enabled PVR. So it's we had a play around with that the other day, Brad, with high-definition 1080p, and so far it's done a really, really good job. So, you know, we're still working through that one, but at the moment it's a bit of a thumbs up. It does have a pretty high-end price model, but I think it sort of fits in that category of you get what you paid for. But we'll have a bit more on that next week. But it's a really good device, and I'm enjoying sort of using it. And there'll be an article, I think, during the week go up for that one.
Okay, bad echo. Not sure where that's coming from.
Sounds like crickets.
Yes, there is.
Yes, there is.
Steve?
Steve?
Huh?
Is it coming from
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Let's get into some news then.
Okay, if everybody could mute. Thank you. Will you be buying the new iPad Air? And I know we talked about it a little bit, but apparently there's a huge gulf between benchmarks and real-world usage. Synthetic tests do give us a good metric by which to compare different hardware platforms, and results for the new iPad Air suggest that Apple's flagship tablet is absolutely faster than the previous models. There's the new 64-bit A7 processor running at 1.4 gigahertz, 100 megahertz faster than it was on the iPhone 5S, which is lightning fast. And the new iPad Air is achieving benchmark scores that are 80% better than the iPad 4 could hit. So apparently it's much faster. We know it's much lighter. During the unveiling of the iPad, Apple claimed that both the CPU and GPU in the iPad Air was twice as fast as that found in the iPad 4. While the performance improvements compared to the iPad 4 are impressive, it's when you compare the iPad Air to the iPad 2, which is still sold by Apple and cost $100 less than the entry-level 16-bit iPad Air, that you see just how much progress Apple's made. The iPad Air is a whopping 7 times faster than the iPad 2, and that means that the question that people buying an iPad 2 have to ask themselves is whether that $100 that they're saving is really worth what they're taking, they're giving up in terms of performance. So again, I mean, these are just benchmark tests, but everybody's saying that this new iPad Air is fast and fantastic. So I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Paul, do you have any views on your iPad Air? I know you just got one the other day, mate. I'm an iPad mini person personally, but what about you, Paul?
Well, I do think why people are actually still getting the iPad 2, it's pretty much because of the connector, I would gather.
Yeah.
Because most people don't really want to go to Lightning yet because they have so many 40-pin connector devices. So that's why I reckon the iPad 2 is selling really, really well at the moment. But in terms of iPad Air, I do think the only letdown is the OS because it is supposed to be faster, but you noticed certain things that, I don't know, Apple are being a bit sloppy. Like, it's not really, like, it works great on the iPhone 5S because it looks like it's been built for a phone more so than it has been a tablet. iOS 7 to me doesn't feel like a tablet OS. It just feels like a blown up smartphone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I get you.
It just lacks the polish that Apple's known to do with their products, and it just happens to be the OS that is the letdown. Other than that, it's still a good product. It's just the OS should be optimized for the iPad rather than, you know, not be optimized for it.
All right. Steve Monks, do you have a view on that story?
Yeah, look, I'm a big fan of iOS 7. I was a little bit skeptical going in, but my experience, both on my phones, plural, and iPad mini is awesome. You know, I like the clean look. I like that it seems right. It's obviously run better since they've dropped their point updates, right? That's always going to be a thing. But as far as the functionality of the OS and what it's doing, it's actually, this might sound crazy, I actually think it's made my iPad mini faster.
Yeah, for sure, man.
That's interesting, because I when I upgraded my 4S to the new iOS 7, it seemed to take things longer, you know, like, because I think because of all the motion that was going on.
All right. Andrew, do you have a view on that story?
Yeah, I think obviously the iPad Air, it's better, it's quicker, it's faster. I mean, just looking at the, you know, the numbers, it's considerably quicker than the 4, and it's almost 6 times quicker than the iPad 3, which I've got. But at some point, you need to sort of ask yourself, what am I doing with this product, and is it doing it sufficiently at the moment? You know, and my iPad 3 is doing everything I need it to do. It's doing it quickly. It's doing it efficiently. So even though the iPad Air is considerably quicker, there's nothing compelling me to say, you know, I need to go and do that. As I said earlier in the show, if I was my iPad 1, for example, which is really slow, you know, it's crashing, loading things. But my 3 and my iPad mini are doing everything absolutely fine. So maybe the new one's quicker, but unless I particularly have a need for it and I'm frustrated with my existing one, I don't sort of see the need to upgrade to it.
All right. Chatterbox Live, your view? What's your opinion?
I don't know. Did Jody say, mention something about the benchmarks or something was might have been flubbed or something? I just wanted to ask her real quick.
Go ahead.
Jody, you there?
What was that again?
I don't know. You mentioned something about benchmarks where it's much faster. Well, I was going to – the reason I mentioned it because I know Samsung's is notorious for when you run a benchmark on their tablet, it actually speeds up. For the benchmark, giving it more, you know, higher specs on the benchmark than their other programs, and then it slows down again. But I was just going to add that in there.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think what the article was referring to is the fact that when you're benchmarking it, yes, it's 3 times faster, but in real world, you may not notice it. You see that it's faster, but you may not be able to perceive that it's 3 times faster. So,
yeah, I agree. Yeah, the average user may not notice unless they actually run a program to take use of all available power of the new iPad.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. Thanks for putting more stipulation on that.
All right. Next story, Jody.
Sure. Okay. This one, actually, Brad, you were the one who pointed this one out, and it has to do with the Google Glass. Evidently, there's a design change, and the pundits are saying that it's slightly better, but it still looks ridiculous. Google revealed the new Google Glass in a post to the company's social media site, and the core problem remains the same. It still looks ridiculous and hilariously out of touch. And the new version does come with a few notable improvements. First, you can clip it to a wider variety of sunglasses now, as well as your prescription frames. The other big change is that instead of a speaker, it comes with a detachable mono bud that you can plug into your ear. You still can't drive with it. The developer edition will set you back $1,500 until the much cheaper shelf edition comes out. Explorers can now invite up to 3 friends to buy a pair, and it's still, unfortunately, rather bulky, especially for something designed for you to wear on your face every waking hour. And unfortunately, that's kind of the crux of glasses problems. While the privacy concerns are overstated, it's simply too glaring and obvious for anyone outside of a small confluence of rich white guys to wear and use with any regularity. Apparently, they tried to get Glass into Vogue, but that trickle-down idea of fashion only works when form takes precedence over function. So apparently Google's trying to figure it out. They're making strides in the right direction. They're trying to make Glass look less like a cyberpunk millionaire's dream and like something more agreeable to the proletarian standards of us regular folks. So there you have it. Still kind of silly looking and a little off the beaten track. You can tell what it is, though, when people are wearing it.
Oh, you can, definitely. Andrew, what do you think?
I mean, my opinion's much the same on Glass. I think it's a good product that's still just a little bit, you know, rudimentary. It's not quite there yet as far as form, as you were saying, Jody. But as a product, I think it's fantastic. And when the release version comes out for the $300 or $400, I'll be there to buy one. I'll probably line up to buy one. As for the Explorer, if you could buy an Explorer version in Australia for $1,500, I'd buy one today.
Are you serious? So,
yeah, I'm dead serious.
Wow.
I think it's the future. I think whether or not this technology makes it right now, this is where the future is going to be. Right now, it looks, you know, a cyborg sort of thing, but it's not going to take long until I can actually build this thing into a nice Oakley or, you know, Ray-Ban pair of frames, and you'll start working through it. I'm talking, you know, years, not decades or anything. So this is where it's going to be. And for me, I need to make sure that we can start building technology for the, you know, the mirror API as soon as possible, because this is where it's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm happy with my phone. Steve, what do you think? Steve Monks, what do you think, mate?
Google Glass is the best gadget ever. Quite seriously, I think we talk about wearable technology as the future of tech. And what Google are trying to do is they're really putting it out there, right? Okay, the first version might have looked a bit clunky and might not have been the most... And as someone that wears glasses, I was kind of going, how is that going to work for me? The fact that we haven't even got to really full release yet, and what they've delivered is a more streamlined version that's a little bit more functional, only means that really by version 3, it's going to be a cracker. And we have a look at the way the iPhone's developed over its release life. It's become thinner, lighter, faster. The battery life may or may not have improved. All of those things. This is what happens when you have that iterative development process. Once you've got the idea, how can we make it look cooler, work better, be the thing? I agree. If I had the opportunity to get a pair of Google Glasses right now, I would jump on it.
All right. Good answer. What about you, Paul? Would you get them? Get a pair?
Well, if I ever tried it, I'd actually have to try one to see if I liked it or anything like that. But from what I can see, it looks good. Even with the sunglasses they have on there, it doesn't look too bad. But in terms of would I pay the $1,500, probably not.
It's a lot of money.
I'd probably buy a laptop for that.
Exactly.
The thing is, I've tried them on and I've used them, and it's kind of corny to say, but once you put them on your head and you use it and you talk to it and you go through, as you just said, Steve, it all comes to you that it's not quite there yet, but the end game is going to be absolutely superb. And if you think of a webcam used to come in a huge box and it was clunky and you put it on top of your monitor. Now you've got a webcam built into your phone, you've got it built into your laptop, and it's just this tiny little dot in the middle of the screen. That's where I see these things going in time. So that's where functionality will overtake form, and we'll all be on board.
Maybe they'll put one in your head, Andrew. Plant one in your brain.
Sounds like a dare.
it's only going to take a couple of iterations, quite seriously, before Google Glass goes from being this large, you know, really obvious thing that people are wearing on their face to being something that is just looks like a normal pair of glasses, or even a step further, is just a contact lens.
Yeah. Yep. What about you, Chatterbox Live? Do you have a view on that story, mate?
I don't know. I was kind of skeptical. Of course, I'm not talking about what it can actually do, but it seems like the newer version seems even bulkier than the first one.
It looks ugly. I don't know what it is. It looks really, I don't know. It looks.
Yeah, it's so big that, you know, a lot of people, they want it to fit in with what they're wearing and so on. Of course, if they don't care about that, then that's be fine. But a lot of people, they want to kind of, if they're wearing a business suit, they obviously don't want it to really stick out that much if they're taking it to work or something like that. I don't know. Another problem I've also seen, because there's a lot of people that wear glasses. How are you going to fit it, especially the bulky one, over a regular pair of glasses, if it'll be uncomfortable? Now, if they had a version where you could actually put subscription lenses on it, easy way to do that, then, you know, maybe they could solve that problem.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure the new version, it says the new version comes out with a few improvements. Firstly, you can clip it onto a wider variety of sunglasses as well as your prescription frames. So it looks like the new version does actually allow you to do that. But it's quite an interesting conversation that we're having. We're not looking at the functionality of what this delivers. It's all about design and experience. So it shows just how important design and experience is. Because we've got this big bulky thing sitting on the side of our face, we're almost ignoring the fact of what it can actually deliver.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I reckon we would be outraged if we got Google Glass and it did nothing. right? It has to do something. Yeah. I think what we have heard already, what we've seen from the stories and that sort of thing, and the expectation that specs that Google have put out, it's going to do some stuff. And there's even the fact that they're talking about, well, like any technology, we might have an idea. Someone else is going to have a different idea of how to apply it. And what that then is going to mean, it could be advances in all sorts of different fields beyond just, you know, nerds shelling out some coin and going, ha, I just updated my Google Plus status with my eyeball.
Well, how about the Google Glass itself? Does it have to be tethered to a phone, or can it just use a wireless hotspot itself? And that might be another problem with adoption, because if they got to, you know, have a phone to sync it to constantly, you know, there may be an issue. Or
yeah, I think you need a phone to use it, I think.
Yeah, for now, yeah.
For the current version.
Yeah, it needs a Wi-Fi connection or something, whether it's your phone or whatever.
If it had just a Wi-Fi connection, then that would probably be fine. But, I think that's what with the Galaxy Gear Watch. Another problem is you have to sync it to a phone, and a particular phone, phones for that as well.
All right. Next story, JD.
Okay, also about Google and kind of what's going on with the U.S. government. Google and Yahoo were hacked by the U.S. government. Apparently, the National Security Agency broke into the highly secure data centers where Google and Yahoo store vast troves of data on their servers by hacking an unencrypted weak point in the data pipeline linking the enormous centers, which is according to a story that was published in the New York Post. The massive servers run by the leading internet companies are carefully guarded and they're strictly audited. And apparently these buildings that house their servers are guarded 24/7. They're secured with heat-sensitive cameras, biometric verification, and more. Of course, the servers hold terabytes of confidential data, everything about the users, including the emails they send, their video chats, banking information, all the private data one would hope to be kept under lock and key. But while the information was under lock and key, the links between the servers that are scattered across the globe are less secure. And by tapping into that link, the NSA can collect information at will from hundreds of millions of users. And that's not just foreign citizens, but emails, videos, and audio also from American citizens. The numbers are absolutely staggering, 180 million records in something like 30 days. Not a small program. But according to documents that the Washington Post obtained, evidently the numerous complaints were that the program was harvesting too much data, and a lot of it, for some reason, had low intelligence value. Like, I can't even imagine if they hacked my emails, they'd probably get something really, really boring. But anyway, they were tapping into the fiber optic cable, and all of that was raw stuff in proprietary data format. So they had to have a system in place to translate that into something that was readable. So, you know, I mean, a lot of these stories about what's been happening, you know, in terms of the government hacking into servers, evidently a similar thing happened with Yahoo. Yahoo told Fox News that they have strict controls in place to protect the security of the data centers. And they haven't given access, according to them, to NSA or any other government agency. But evidently, they're still getting in through these security holes. And fixing the hole is not a simple task. Obviously, they need to add SSL acceleration cards, specialized hardware components, something that will offload the work of encoding and decoding the information back into SSL. So, absolutely, there's a lot of work that has to be done to make the information more secure. But as you can imagine, as more and more information is flooding the internet and more of this information is available, it's not just going to be the NSA. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity, unfortunately, for that information to be retrieved and hacked. So I think that the point of the story is that these large companies who are charged with the responsibility for protecting our information need to do a better job. Then again, it's against the NSA, which is going to be a difficult uphill battle. So I don't know if anybody has any comments on that, but
Andrew, any comments at all?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I guess the last 5 years there's been this huge push in sort of corporate around the world moving away from legacy platforms and servers housed under your feet and, you know, having a tech guru at the office. Let's all go to the cloud. It's cheaper pay per month. With all of what's happening now with NSA and the Prism, you know, being opened up, that we know this back-end knowledge of all of our information going away from us, I just wonder whether or not corporate America and corporate, you know, Australia and the world as a whole is going to start now moving away from cloud hosting and cloud storage and cloud products like, you know, Gmail and Skype and these sorts of things, because they're just not sure who's, you know, listening in, and whether or not conversations could have bearings on paying tax and any of these sorts of things. So I wonder whether we're actually going to drive people away from the cloud and back into legacy platforms.
All right, what about you, Paul? What's your view on that story, mate?
Well, I do think the bottom line is, like, the cloud stuff is definitely something that, well, virtualization in general is going to be used regardless of its security issues, mainly because of the cost factor. Like, it does save companies substantially a ton of money. So I'm pretty sure getting them away from cloud stuff is probably going to be a very hard thing to do. They're more likely to add their own type of security measures into internally rather than actually going away from the cloud in general. I don't know how they would actually do that, because they would be, I know, adding more bulk to their own links. But, yeah, I don't think that they would actually draw away from data centers and all the virtualization stuff that they're currently trying to do now.
I don't know whether multinationals, though, might run one cloud service for their thousands of employees and then run another secure intranet for their executive teams. Just purely thinking out there.
Mm. What about you, Steve Monk? What's your view on that, mate?
Well, firstly, we have to acknowledge our traditional owners, the United States government, and hi to all the NSA guys that are listening into this. look, it's an interesting mess, isn't it? Because as someone who's worked at a level where I've both been the guy that's going to fix the server and the guy who said, yes, we need servers, to also then being the guy, hey, it would be a really cool thing if we went and started to use this outsourced cloud thing, whether it's just a data center or whether it's us holeless bolus moving our entire mail infrastructure out of Exchange, which is the predominant enterprise environment, to a Google or an Outlook situation, depending on which flavor you want to play with. That it's this easy to hack. I don't think there's going to be any sort of massive knee-jerk where companies are going to go, that's it, we're gone, we're not using Gmail anymore, we're all back internally. All that will happen is that the companies involved will tighten their security measures and encrypt or provide their own dark fiber connections between their data centers around the world that enable this sort of thing. And you would be probably not surprised to find that some really big companies just do it all themselves for exactly this reason. And they have their data centers around the world and they have them either dark fiber connected or VPN. Mm. 128-bit encrypted to connect them, or private cloud them through their own, you know, international telco deals, so that they get a faux dark fiber connection anyway that keeps it off the public internet. It's just all, you know, enterprise quiet. This is our stuff. If people really cared about secrets, quite frankly, they just wouldn't get on the internet.
Yep. All right. Chatterbox Live. What do you reckon?
Yeah, and the NSA is kind of going really crazy over this. In fact, there's also another news story where they're taking United States allies. I think it was the French. They hacked into them. It's getting kind of crazy. I think they should, you know, have to get some kind of court order to do this. Of course, NSA is part of the government, so they can probably get away with a lot of stuff. A lot of other people can, but. Hopefully, what's great about this, though, is people know this is happening. There's proof. So that's the first step, is knowing that and letting people know that they're doing this so companies can prevent this in the future.
All right. Jody, next story.
Good answer. Yeah. Yeah, so there's been a little bit of a mystery that's been taking place over the last week or so. I don't know if you guys have heard about these barges that were appearing, one in San Francisco and one in Portland, which is in Maine. And reputedly, they were owned by Google, and everybody was curious, you know, what are they there? Are they a data center? But apparently, now the conjecture is that they could be showcases for the Google Glass retail stores. So evidently, there was a report by the Los Angeles Times that many of the reporters who were going after the barge have been looking at the wrong San Francisco lease. And evidently, he feels, or they feel at the Times, that the correct lease states the purpose is for prefabrication of a special event structure, an art exhibit only, and for no other purpose. So again, they're still not quite sure 100% of what Google's doing with these barges, but it seems like they might be creating mobile stores where they're going to showcase glass for their eventual retail run. And evidently, that's going to be coming up fairly soon. So these floating stores are being constructed. So that's kind of that story.
All right. Yep.
Do you want me to continue reading through them? Because
yeah, go ahead. Yeah, might as well. Yeah.
We only have a couple more stories, and then guys, if you like, when we get done all three, you can pick one and see which one you think is most interest. But you know how like on Google Plus and on Facebook on Saturday they call it Catterday. So apparently, some people who were buying Dell laptops had a little bit more Catterday than they had counted on. Over the past couple of months, people who purchased Dell Latitude 6430U have noticed something unusual about their new computers. And apparently, they seem to emit a smell that's almost like it was assembled near a Tomcat's litter box. God. And this isn't just one user. Apparently, there's several users that have been complaining on the Dell message boards. And it even got more embarrassing. Apparently, if you clean the keyboard, as Dell initially suggested, it does nothing to alleviate it. And several users began to chime in with their own concerns about the smell. And somebody even thought that their cat did it. And evidently, it is something with the computer construction. They say that the smell is not a health hazard. And as soon as they figure out exactly where it's coming from and how to fix it, they're going to let everybody know. So if you're at a friend's house and their computer kind of reeks, it's not their cat. Next story, Apple is looking into practical solar charging for notebooks and iOS devices. I don't know about you, but I know that this will be a welcome change for me because it seems like my iPhones are always running out of power. And I use that Smart Brick, which is great, the smart charger. But nonetheless, it's still, you know, I mean, you're charging your devices, your Apple devices fairly often. So evidently, there's a new patent application. And it indicates that Apple's been thinking about how to practically deliver the benefits of solar power to their mobile devices without requiring clumsy, gigantic external converters. Solar charging is still fairly fringe when it comes to the general gadget-using population, but Apple's patent, which was originally filed in 2012, looks like it could provide a way to make getting your power from the sun something that's generally palatable in the next couple of years. So the system that's in the Apple's patent is a powerful management array for accepting both power adapter and solar power direct from gathering devices or traditional mains-based chargers. So in other words, you plug your MagSafe or iPod adapter or hook a MacBook or other piece of hardware directly into a solar panel with a cord, and then there's a means for accepting both inputs at the same time. According to the patent, there'd be a power balance that will charge a device quicker, but more economically than use of juice from the grid. So that's that story. And last but not least, you know that song Blurred Lines, which may or may not have become famous as the twerking song that Miley Cyrus performed to? Well, evidently there's some blurred lines for that blurred song because it seems to be that Marvin Gaye's song, Got to Give It Up, apparently filed a complaint against Blurred Lines, and they won the complaint for copyright infringement. Some other songs that are fairly popular that you may know, Ice Ice Baby, Vanilla Ice sampled from a song. They say that it bears a striking resemblance to Under Pressure, and Vanilla Ice paid Queen and Bowie and gave Freddie Mercury and Bowie writers credits for the song Ice Ice Baby. Another one that you may not think of, there's a lawsuit involving British superband Oasis, and they were sued by Australia's The New Seekers for stealing from a song that became famous via an American commercial, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. That became nationally known after appearing in the wildly successful 1971 ad for Coca-Cola. But they think that they took the music from a song that was by Oasis. I don't know if you guys know the song, but evidently it's called Shaker Maker. So they're fairly similar. And Ghostbusters, you know, the Ray Parker Jr. song, one of the most catchiest songs in movie history, evidently it bears an uncanny resemblance to I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis. So, and one more, you know, there's only one song that has a reference to Vegemite sandwiches. And, you know, Brad, I was thinking about you when I saw this story. And it's hard to imagine that Men at Work Down Under stole that song from another source. But evidently, it was inspired by another Australian classic, albeit one that was meant for children, Kookaburra. And so apparently, 5% of all the royalties since 2002 from the Men at Work song, Down Under, all go to the writers of Kookaburra. So,
wow.
And that's the news, guys.
Great news, Jody, as always. Very interesting. Andrew, what's your view on them last three stories, mate?
Interesting with the Apple solar charging. I'm really, I know it sounds a bit funny, but I'm really looking forward to seeing where we go with that sort of thing. I'd love to see some kind of charging for your phone that works off body heat. I think that's a direction.
Cool.
I don't know if they've gone in that direction, but I think that'd be a really good place to go. So your phone's in your pocket, you know, it's charging. You take it out, you put it on the table for a couple of hours, but then you put it back in your pocket and away you go again. But the charging technology of the future is going to be really interesting. Like, we're so sick of my phone's plugged in now and it's only lunchtime. You know, it'd be really good to see where they end up with that. And obviously then with devices like Google Glass and these sorts of things, if you don't need to worry about charging them, it can use, you know, the energy from your body. I think that'd be something really cool one day.
Yeah, definitely. What about you, Paul? What's your view on them stories?
What's interesting with that solar charging thing is that they're not looking at new ways of improving batteries. They're looking at new ways of charging them. And I do think it's a good idea, but, you know, why don't they look at actually not just the charging methods, but actually look at the way of improving battery technology as well, since it's been the same since, I don't know, forever. So that might be a good thing, I reckon. But I do think from the rumors I heard, they're actually trying to incorporate some sort of solar panel into a certain watch screen.
Okay.
That may or may not happen. Maybe that's going to be their trial run on this sort of thing. Who knows? But that's pretty much my view on that story.
You got the Pebble Watch, Paul. How's that?
Yes.
So far, mate. Give us a quick info on that.
Well, the battery life is really, really good. It's like 7 days in total that I've counted so far. It charges relatively quickly. Off USB, and basically it takes about an hour or so to charge to complete. Booting sequence is really awesome because it takes like a second to boot.
Wow.
And that's about it.
Okay.
But in terms of functionality, it is like a first product sort of thing, and there's a lot of, you know, it's got potential, but there's a lot of things that you don't expect in, you know, mainstream devices to occur. In this case, there's stuff like the way updates are given out, the SDK they give you is sort of not as polished as, say, something from Google or Apple. The way they produce the products, you know, there's not a huge production of the product itself. And if you actually want it outside of the US, it takes, you know, 2 weeks to get.
Okay.
As opposed to, you know, Google or Apple, where you'll get it no matter where you are in the world within, you know, a week or a couple of days. So I do think there's a lot of potential for the watch to be really, really, really good. But at the moment, I think they're doing very well for a first-time product.
What's your view on the new Nexus 5 phone, Paul? Just a quick, brief answer.
It's good.
Like it? Okay. Are you getting one, or are you going to keep with the iPhone or the HTC one, or what?
No, because HTC one, I'll be able to get the... Because I've got the Google Play Edition now, I'll be able to get the update in 2 weeks, apparently, the KitKat one.
Cool. Good one. All right.
So that'll be good.
All right. Can't wait. Steve Monk, what do you think about the new stories from Jody?
I just love Americans saying kookaburra.
Yeah.
It's kookaburra.
Yeah, look, there's music plagiarism and you know, sampling and stuff. It's been around for a while, and that'll be around forever. I always actually thought it was a pretty spurious call about the men at work thing. I didn't think it sounded that bad, but, you know, screw you guys. as for the rest of it, welcome to the Google podcast.
Google podcast. All right, Chatterbox Live, what about you? What do you think?
Actually, there was two stories. What Andrew mentioned is very interesting because he mentioned this had to do with the solar power phone thing. He mentioned where the use of body heat to recharge the device. And I don't know if we covered this in the tech webcast before, but there was a little girl, teenager, I think she was developing a flashlight that when you hold it, it develops electricity to recharge or activate the flashlight itself. It doesn't work efficiently yet, but it was what Andrew brought up. It was a very interesting concept as well. And, of course, with the Google Barge, I the first thing I kind of thought of when they mentioned the barges was I know right now as Google's into with their mapping, they're also looking to map underneath the water, like virtual tours and mapping undersea, like the Barrier Reef and so forth. So I was kind of wondering maybe they might utilizing these barges for something like that. It's probably wrong. I'm probably a wild guess, but that's the first thing that popped into my mind.
All right. Good answer. Andrew, the guest today, mate.
Yeah, we have. We've got a very special guest. Steve Malk from MalksTVTalk.com is on the show.
Yes,
and Malk's TV Talk, it's got TV in the name, and you better bet that's what he likes to do.
Exactly.
Welcome to the show, Steve.
Yeah, welcome, Steve.
Thank you, guys.
What have you been up to, mate, the last time we spoke? You've been watching a lot of TV shows, the Foxtel and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, look, there's lots. And we've hit that sweet spot in the year where, because we've got to the end of the year, and I know America have just had it, Australia now get to have their upfront season with what's coming for us, calendar year 2014. We've had launches from SBS, from Seven, and from Foxtel already, and there's a ton of television coming. But the huge news, really, across the board was technology and what that's going to do for television next year. There's lots of talk about HBB TV. There's lots of talk about apps for networks and those sorts of things. But we were talking before the show, Brad, about the new Foxtel IQ3. Now,
yep.
Foxtel's their set-top box has been due for a refresh for a long, long time. What they're looking to deliver with IQ3, allegedly somewhere in quarter one 2014, is not only, you know, your standard set-top box in here, I want to watch the shows and record the things, but there's apparently 8 tuners in it. Although, from what I've read of specs so far, only 5 are being used. So you'll be able to watch a show and record 4 others simultaneously. So I guess the other 3 tuners are just there for a holiday. But the other big bit is that the IQ3 will allow you to plug into your Wi-Fi or your home internet connection, and coupled with the EPG, so you press the guide button, pops up, tells you what's coming in the future. This will allow you to scroll back up to, I think it was 26 hours, and go, I want to watch a show that I missed last night, press play, and using your internet connection on demand, stream that down to you as good as if you were watching it via the terrestrial service.
Wow.
Andrew?
It's pretty awesome technology.
It is very awesome.
That's really cool. I mean, we're getting to the point now, Steve, where TV is so on demand, and the market, the Gen Y people growing up, you know, need it now generation. It's getting to the point almost where we won't have programmed television anymore. You'll sit down, it'll know what your habits are, and it will just be like, hey, you know, latest episode of Dancing with the Stars was on. Do you want to catch it now? It'll just play it. I don't know if I like that, though. Like, where were we with all of this context and stuff like that? Where will we learn new things? Like, well, do people still channel? Steve, do you still sit down at 9:15 at night and channel flick?
Well, firstly, I'm not sure how many Generation Y kids are sitting down and watching Dancing with the Stars.
True, good luck to them. That was just the first one that came to my mind. As soon as I said it, I'm like, I don't even watch that show. Why would I say that?
But it's all right. I appreciate what you're trying to get at. Look, for me, I'm not your standard television user, right? Like, I publish a TV guide on MoxTVTalk.com every week of things that I think are worth checking out. So it's not just like you can go to your guide on screen or get it out of the paper or online or whatever. But I like to troll through all of that and say, look, guys, on, for example, Monday night, all of these things are happening, but these are the things that are worth checking out or interesting or have something attached to them. I do sometimes, like last night I found myself flicking around on television to see what was on just because I'd been doing some other work, and Friday night's a bit of a death when it comes to television anyway, and I ended up flicking on the Foxtel Play and watching The Dark Knight Rises, which was awesome, again, for about the fourth time. So, yeah, there's that, but I think a lot of people still are heavy on, like, let's just press the guide, let's find out what's happening and do that sort of stuff. There's definitely a push with people who are younger, and I'm going to say younger than 35, who are keen for your non-linear broadcast television, i.e. these are the people who will hunt out what they want to see when they want to see it, whether it's via torrent sites, and I don't encourage that, but whether people choose to do that, whether they're jumping online to use the official catch-up services of the networks and those sorts of things, or whether they're just, you know, go out and hiring or buying DVDs to binge, that sort of stuff. Look, all of that is definitely something that the free-to-air networks are struggling with. How do they connect in with that? How do we, you know, attract a market that can deal with our things that we think you should watch? Oh, but by the way, you can go and watch these other things as well, which is in competition to our broadcasty things.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Paul, any questions?
Yeah, being a member of the Gen Y generation,
it's your fault.
I have to say though, I rather would actually have a service like Netflix and literally just choose whatever I want when I want at any time I want with no ads.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, for stuff like news and that type of stuff, I don't remember the last time I actually sat down and watched the 6 o'clock news. It's probably something that is in the past, I think, to watch. Like, for starters, why would you want to watch the entire voting proceedings of, you know, say, an election? Why do we need to be subjected to that?
Why would you not? It's the best television ever.
Why do we need to watch that?
What's amazing, if for no other reason, then particularly if we look at the last federal election in Australia, everyone knew what who the winner was going to be before the polls closed. Like, we all were thinking, we know there's going to be a change in government. This is all going to happen. And so effectively, all it was really was sitting down and seeing how much damage was going to be done to the Labor Party. And the drama in that, in seeing the results come in and seeing both some really good, network talent hold their own and keep us entertained and interested. That's good. But then the other extreme is some network talent you maybe thought were good that are actually really rubbish in trying to maintain an unscripted sort of flying by the seat of your pants conversation. It's an interesting thing. Just to pick up on your Netflix comment, I agree that to have Netflix come to Australia would be an amazing coup for us as a market. And I think that they'd probably find a fair chunk of people would sign up.
Oh, yeah.
The catch
definitely
for Netflix is that they are getting enough money out of their deal with Foxtel, who they have, you know, because it's all about territorial broadcast rights. So they go, right, hey, Foxtel, we'll sell you House of Cards. We'll sell you Orange is the New Black. We'll sell you Arrested Development for price X. And at this point, it's probably more than they would get via a subscription model, i.e. we'd need in Australia for Netflix. I'm going to pick a number, but they might need maybe 200,000 people to sign up in Australia to get that, to make it worthwhile for Netflix to broadcast here. Now, we also have to take into effect that we've got QuickFlix, which is rubbish, but it's the closest thing that we've got. And we're not looking like we're going to be getting an NBN. Now, had the proper, well, I'm going to say the proper, the original idea of fibre to the home NBN being delivered to all of us, or the, you know, the majority of the population, the way that would have transformed television for us would have been incredible, because it would have forced the hand of all of the free-to-air and even Foxtel networks in how they deliver and what they deliver to us. We would have seen a much quicker shift to non-linear on-demand viewing, and how that works. There is big business in news for the free-to-air and for Foxtel networks, huge business. In fact, this coming week at Mark's TV Talk on my podcast, I've got an interview with all five free-to-air news directors. So from ABC, wow, SBS, 7, 9 and 10, starting Sunday, just a quick series, the little 20-minute podcasts, a series of conversations with them about the future of news and technology and what it means for them and their network. So check that out, because there's some great answers and some great vision and some surprises as far as maybe not so much vision from those guys.
What, new channels or new free-to-air channels or? Or what?
Well, I did ask Darren Wick, the head of Nine News and Current Affairs, you know, because they've got a lot going on for Nine. They're about to float on the stock exchange in Australia and become a publicly listed company. You know, they've a lot going on. I said, how long before you guys have a 24-hour news channel? And he laughed and he said, I keep telling Ginge, David Gingell, the boss, that just give me the bandwidth and we'll make it happen. Wow. So that's an offhanded remark from him. It wouldn't surprise me quite seriously, though, if 2015 sees another free-to-air network or two drop in just as an additional channel in their suite, because, you know, Nine have got Nine Go and Gem.
Yep.
And, you know, the rubbishy data casting thing.
Oh, yeah, they're rubbish. Yeah, they get rid of them.
Yeah, but to see them drop in an extra channel that is just their news product, it wouldn't be hard. They're basically delivering 8.5 to 9 hours of news a day now. Wow. So to push it to a full 24-hour cycle would not be hard.
I really want to see a Rage 24-hour music channel on Freeview. That would be good.
Well, with the hybrid broadband broadcast technology, this HBB TV, that's not actually out of the question, right? So what all that is enabling the terrestrial networks, the stuff that we get via the magical airwaves, it allows you to link in and for them to supply channels to your television via the internet in the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, given that they're pushing the federal government for more bandwidth once the analog shutdown happens, they want to have more bandwidth to do more channels and HD and that sort of stuff, proper HD. Good news, by the way, there will actually be some HD AFL in 2014 on Channel 7.
Yep.
Not a lot, but a bit. They have committed to that.
Good stuff.
So they want the bandwidth. If they can do that, then it's not unreasonable to think that you might see the ABC stretch an extra channel in there, whether it's terrestrial broadcast or HBB, to say, here's Rage, like we've got Dig broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Jody, what's your view on all this, and do you understand any of this at all? Because it's in Australia.
It's interesting because I think most of what you're talking about has to do with the situations in Australia more so than the US. So I really... It's interesting. I'm learning by listening to the conversation. You know, we do have Netflix here. So, and a lot of the stations that we have their own original programming, which I'm sure your stations do as well.
Yep.
I'm just not as familiar with it. And so, Steve, I guess I'd ask you, a couple of the things that I watch that I'm crazy about every Sunday night, I have to sit down, and first it was Breaking Bad, and now Walking Dead is back on. Are those shows also airing in Australia? You know, are they as big hits there as they are here?
Yeah, look, bro, this is the catch for us, though, as opposed to cable being so popular in the US and so accessible. We don't have that in Australia. There's five free-to-air networks, and then we have one cable provider, and that's Foxtel. So they're the guys that sign a lot of these big US, particularly cable shows. So Breaking Bad was on Foxtel. Loved it. My goodness. I can't wait for the the Barrel series set to come out at the end of the year. That's my Christmas present. Walking Dead is back on. It's on Foxtel. But again, loving that. The big thing for us over here is that because we've got all of these big shows out of the States that we like to consume in Australia, to try and combat the people that, well, screw you guys, you're not showing me when I want to see it, I'm going to go and download it. The networks in their various successes are doing what they call fast tracking. So showing it in Australia, Foxtel are doing it the best. They're showing it within sort of an hour or 2 hours of it finishing on the west coast of America. We'll get The Walking Dead is shown what they call Express from the US at 1:30 on a Monday afternoon. And then it's replayed in prime time. So people can IQ it and watch it whenever, or, you know, if they want to be sneaky, plan their lunch hour to watch The Walking Dead on Monday or Sons of Anarchy or all of that sort of thing. The free-to-air networks are doing it with lesser success or calling it fast-tracked when it's actually a week and a half behind Channel 7, shake my fist at you. But then 10 are legitimately fast-tracking some things. Homeland is within a few hours of it airing in the States. Same with Sleepy Hollow. The Blacklist is about a week behind. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is about a week and a half behind. We've got that mess. Plus, then there's Australian content, which you only get when it's broadcast. And people flock to that as much as they do the American stuff.
All right, Chatterbox Live, do you have any questions for Steve?
Oh, yeah, sure. Now, notably with, since you only really have one cable provider in Australia, do you find like with the internet, since the availability and all that, that kind of gives competition for the only cable station there? Because here in America, we don't have Freeview and all that. So, I mean, we do have, you know, viewing over air, but the choices aren't good. But so, yep. Do they give them enough competition where Foxtel really has to up their game to be able to keep compete with their other competitors?
Yeah, no, and great question. No, definitely the free-to-air networks in Australia take the fight to Foxtel. Admittedly, a couple of them have shares in Foxtel, so they're part owners of that product. So there's, you know, some to-ing and fro-ing, including that comes down to Foxtel may buy a series that they air first in Australia. And because it's subscription television, and look, to get a decent package on cable in Australia can cost you, you know, $120-$150 a month. You know, it can get a bit, from our perspective, that's a bit rich when free-to-air is free. Turn on the television and it works. But then because of those deals, relatively quickly you might see that show, once the series is finished on Foxtel on cable, pop up on free-to-air within sort of 6 to 12 months in that regard. But the catch, of course, is there that if it's something like a Walking Dead or a Breaking Bad, anyone that's wanted to see it has seen it. That said, SBS, which is one of – we have two government broadcasters in Australia, government-funded, government-owned. They're airing in what they call slow track, which is, I thought, a pretty funny sort of take on it. They're airing The Walking Dead Season 1, Episode 1. So they're starting the first season of Walking Dead in a couple of weeks for people to catch up with and find out what this thing – from the US is all about. And I actually think that they'll probably get a half-decent audience out of it.
That'd be cool, yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Look, it's a great series and a great way to get on board with it if you've not seen it before. And they'll probably find that people will watch it and go and hunt out the box sets to devour over summer.
So, Steve, what's your view on these ads on Foxtel? Are you finding a lot of ads on Foxtel these days now? I know I am, but I'm ready to get rid of it. But what about you? What's your view on that?
Look, I think it's a necessary evil. You know, I just moaned about the fact that Foxtel costs me $120 to $150 a month to subscribe in that regard.
Mm.
But think about it. If they took the ads away, how much more is it going to cost
me? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, good point.
The problem is we've got a country that's as big as the States with only, you know, less than 10% of the people. So we don't have the same, you know, flexibility of, you know, number of people to be able to roll out these massive infrastructures that we have.
Well, yeah, we're not quite as big. We're nearly there. I think Australia's 1.5 times Australia as the US, at least width-wise. But, yeah, when you're looking at a population of the US of, what, 220 million people versus 23 million Australians, it's a more expensive proposition to do anything new or to do stuff. And then, yeah, we don't have the infrastructure. If the NBN had played through the way it was supposed to, that might have been a very serious game changer in that, because Netflix could have come in and gone, great, we'll deliver a service and people can't moan about the quality because hello, NBN. Versus, oh, you're on ADSL with copper, good luck with that.
So, what are you watching more these days? More Foxtel or 3DS, Steve?
Yeah, look, I'm finding, Brad, that I'm watching lots of different things. But certainly, see, I'm lucky enough to get the previews from the networks, including Foxtel. So that becomes something that I am taking advantage of.
That's good.
You know, I got to see a few things before they aired. I got to see Sons of Anarchy premiere.
Oh, I love that show. I love Sons of Anarchy.
Via Foxtel. As early as the guys in the States were previewing it. So the guys that writes over there, same here, I saw it. Wow. But I'll find that Foxtel's my go-to for either specific shows that are fast-track, things like Walking Dead or Sons of Anarchy, Breaking Bad. Or it's my catch-up resource. I'm at a loose end. I don't want to watch any previews. I want to catch a film or watch a show with my kids or whatever, and that's where we go.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying Foxtel Play, and, you know, I just find a lot of ads on there. They just need to cut down on the ads a bit, but... you know, Andrew, what's your view on? What do you watch on TV? And let's wrap up,
Just to wrap up, I guess I'm really time poor for the most part. So I tend to watch, the big show at 8:30 at night, whether it's, an Australian show or whether it's a, direct from the US sort of thing, just on free to wear. My wife has a couple shows that she likes to watch. I'm not overly fussed. We just sort of whatever's the best show on at 8:30 at night, we'll watch that for an hour and relax after dinner, and that's about it. I'm currently catching up on Breaking Bad. I'm only on season one, but really enjoying that. So, been hearing good things for a long time, and now that it's finished, I thought I'd better get around to it.
You have to get into Home and Away, mate, because there's a bomb going around the place. Have you seen the ad for that? Have you?
I'm not that interested in Home and Away.
Have you seen it, Steve?
Look, I've seen the promos. I know what's going to happen. I know what's going on. I'm not going to spoil it.
No, please don't. No. Yeah, please don't. Yeah, because I'm into that. What about you, Paul? What have you been watching on TV? And wrap up, and what's your Twitter name and stuff?
Okay. I actually don't watch TV pretty much for a while now. I haven't watched TV. Most of the stuff that I do watch, though, is either downloaded from iTunes or it's off Netflix. And most of the time, it's on my iPad because basically when I watch TV, it's usually if I'm on a train or if I'm on a plane. So basically, it's
how are you watching Netflix in Australia? That's not possible.
Yeah, Paul, how are you watching Netflix, mate? That's not possible. Yeah, how do you do that? No, don't say
US VPN.
No, that just got awkward. That just got really awkward.
Yeah, this podcast is going to be shut down. Andrew, what's your final view on your of the show, mate, and this sort of stuff?
Yeah, good show, and thanks so much for being on, Steve. Really enjoyed having you on and checking out your website as well, and I'll certainly be keeping an eye on that. So if you want to grab me, I am at facebook.com/cunningdrew. And Twitter /cunningdrew. And you can get me at zarfo.com/@Andrew.
Good stuff. And also me, I'm Brad Osden at Tech Webcast. Jody, final thoughts of the show and your show you've been watching? Any interesting or, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, Walking Dead is now my new Sunday habit.
Sweet.
Something about zombies that, I don't know, it's just fun to watch. As far as the show, yeah, great show. Thank you, Steve, for coming on. As always, you're fascinating, and I appreciate your sharing the state of television or broadcast, or I don't know even what to call it anymore because it's not what it used to be, but thank you. And as far as where you can find me on Twitter as Sunswept, and you can find me in most of the normal places as either Jody Rains or Webmarcom, webmarcom.net.
And you're also a main host on Dan's show now each week, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, Google Plus week, yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah. What's your view on the new Hangouts, by the way, Jody, before we go? The new update and stuff.
It's interesting. At first I went into the Hangout and I was like, wow, this looks so different. I think it's a lot more contemporary. I like the big feeling to it. The screen basically bleeds all the way to the edges. A couple of the interfaces are not as intuitive, but I think once you've played with it a little bit, it's got some cool features, and they're still rolling stuff out. like this idea of being able to say that you want it brighter so that the screen gets brighter. Yeah. That's still rolling out. Mm. And I don't know if you did you get your URL?
Yeah, let's not go there. That sucks, man. That's not good. I don't like it. Do you like it or? I'm not a
fan. Mine was fine. Mine was Jody Rains.
They gave me tech webcast info, which is completely stupid. Andrew, did you get yours at all? Or?
No, I haven't yet. I don't probably use it enough, but I'm still waiting for my URL. But I don't like it. It's plus.google.com/+.
Yeah.
It seems a bit awkward
it
to
is.
Me.
It is. All right. Steve Monks, what's your final view of the show, and where can they get hold of you, mate?
Look, it's always great chatting to you guys. I really appreciate it. I love your passion for technology, and I love the way that you're it's just across so much stuff. It's always great being on Tech Webcast. So thank you for having me. I am at Mulks TV Talk on Twitter. You can get me on the book /MulksTVTalk or at MulksTVTalk.com. I will talk about television until the cows come home, sit on the couch and watch cow TV with me.
Cool stuff. Chatterbox Live, what about you, mate?
Yeah, very interesting show. Considering I'm huge on television series, having Mulk here with us it's really added to my knowledge, especially in Australia, the way do things there. And currently I'm watching this new series, which is Sleepy Hollow, which I really like and continue to watch. And you find me on Twitter as Chatterbox_Live.
Good stuff. And that's about it, Andrew. Big stuff next week, mate. Hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. So good show, guys, and look forward to next week.
Yep, definitely. Thanks, Steve, for coming on. Appreciate it.
And, my pleasure, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
Ta, thanks.
Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric, and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running tech news podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more tech talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guests they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!